There's so much to talk about. I think we're just going to talk about everything today. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to the Saturday edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
And you see, there's so much to talk about that I can't get the phone to stop ringing.
Yes, I know. Usually when we start these great programs where we're going to be going ranging far and wide across the spectrum of things that are going on in our culture today, people start taking notice and start wanting to get involved.
That's right. Too bad it has nothing to do with the radio show.
Well, I was going to say, well, hopefully it calls for your business because we know that we're here in the doldrums of summer. And with all the miserable reports out there with potential crop failures and droughts and storms, and did I mention a presidential campaign? There's all kinds of bad news out there, and we hope that it's not impacting business too often. Bad, but we know that sometimes these things tend to all work together. Now, possibly that just means, Chuck, that you too can engage in some of the most stimulating things for our economy by drawing unemployment and going on food stamps.
Well, let's hope not.
Yeah, and
you know, I'm sitting here weighing, let's see, presidential campaign versus a drought. Oh, man, this is a tough one. I think I might take the drought.
I think I might take the drought, too. I think you're right. It may actually be easier to get through, and you actually have hope at the end.
That's right. At least God occasionally steps in and brings an end to the drought.
Yes, but oftentimes, bad political campaigns just keep going and going and going.
Yeah, presidential campaigns are interminable.
Yes, well, and sometimes the presidents that we get out of them are but also interminable.
Yeah, I seem to recall Jimmy Carter's one-term presidency lasting about, I don't know, 12 or 18 years or something.
Yeah, I know, it seemed like it lasted forever. So it's just amazing sometimes, Charles, that people's memories are very short, I think. And it oftentimes we forget what we did to ourselves in the last election cycle. However, sometimes we get a little glimpse of it right around an election cycle because that's when the opponents start bringing up every bad thing you've ever done in your political or personal life, as the case may be, depending on whether or not you've ever been a public figure before. So hopefully the public has some awareness of what we would call a more holistic look at a candidate.
Well, hopefully. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to work that way, Barry. Now, you and I are a little different, and a number of the people that I know that we've taught in our Constitution classes seem to be a little different on this. We don't look at it necessarily through a party lens. You'll get a lot of nonsense about such and such party good, such and such party bad, and that's the way they want to play this game. And it's been both your and my experience that it doesn't seem to matter what the party label is. Most of these guys are just bad. And that's the bottom line. And I mean, even you and I got involved in third party politics. Well, it turned out that it was just all the little fish who couldn't become big fish in one of the major parties simply moved over to a third party and played the same games over there. So anybody who thinks they're going to get out of this mess by joining up with a third party, all I can say is good luck to you, as saying that as the former chairman of a third party in Ohio.
Exactly.
So the problem, of course, is that we have forgotten that the whole point is not to play party, but it is to have a principled statesmanship based on a biblical ethic. And in fact, I'm sure that that could get me in some circles brought up on charges in my church, although I don't think my church would do it. But there are places where if you make that kind of a statement, you stand a good chance of being tarred and feathered and run out of town on a rail.
Oh, that's true. That's true. And you know, this is something we're going to be talking about today as far as, like I said, ladies and gentlemen, today's going to be kind of a wide-ranging melange, if you will, of topics. But we kind of started off referencing something we talked about earlier in the week, and that was the commentary by the House Minority Whip, Steny Hoyer, who's a Democrat from Maryland, who basically said the two most stimulating things you can do for your economy was unemployment insurance and food stamps. Now, Chuck, we kind of got a laugh out of that during the program, but as I took that kind of to heart a little bit, and as I was looking at different things that we could talk about today, I started seeing things in the press. very serious things too, ladies and gentlemen, but in such a way that if you looked at it in light of Hoyer's comments, and ladies and gentlemen, he was not kidding. He does believe, and he cited unnamed economists, unnamed because they'd be embarrassed to be associated with the comments of Steny Hoyer, that these economists understood that that's the best way to get your economy pumping is unemployment and food stamps because people have to spend it all right away. So in other words, he's against all these wonderful things like savings and planning and things of that nature. It's just get it and spend it, get it and spend it in Steny's worldview. But I thought that was interesting because the Obama administration, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about the administration. We are nonpartisan on here, but this is what's happening currently, so we've got to talk about it. We just had another business, Chuck, this week announced they're shutting down. They're laying off their employees who will now go on unemployment insurance and probably will have to collect food stamps, some of them maybe. And so I'm wondering if this isn't all part of Steny Hoyer's grand economic recovery plan. But it's fascinating because this business is like a number of others that have abruptly gone under in the last 18 months, in that this company called Ammonix is a plant that is, number one, an alternative energy company. They manufacture solar panels. And number two, they actually received over $20 million in federal tax credits and subsidies in the last 18 months, but yet that wasn't enough to keep them from having to turn off the lights and declare that the party was over.
Well, Barry, it's interesting that you bring those two stories together because I was thinking exactly about this afternoon. Now, you and I are cutting this program on a Thursday, and the program that is running Thursday night is the program where we talk about Steny Hoyer's foot in his mouth on this whole business that somehow food stamps and unemployment insurance is stimulating to the economy. And, of course, we debunked that myth in that program. But what we left unspoken was the fact that we talked a little bit about Austrian economics. Well, let's talk about that for a minute. The whole point behind Austrian economics is about investment. And the fact is, the way the Austrians put it is that investment is made by the free market. And remember, we're talking about, this is a macroeconomic lesson rather than a microeconomic lesson, and macro meaning large. So we're looking at the whole market. Markets get investment on the basis of what the market wants to see. Now, you've got another Keynesian view is that you can build a market by simply pumping enough money into a favored place, and that will suddenly grow that market. And that's what we see going on here. What has happened is that the President of the United States has decided that we can build a green economy by simply subsidizing enough businesses to go in and build enough of these solar collectors and passive solar heaters and all this stuff to give it a go and make it a viable market option. Well, even after all these gazillions of dollars invested, let's take a look at it. I once shopped for a solar collection system for my house because I have a roof that's south-facing, and a south-facing roof is a very important thing. I have what's called a hip roof, so I have two places that are strongly south-facing because the sun is never really directly overhead. It's always slightly to the south. That being said, I looked at the thing, and the maximum number of panels I could get on there was going to cost me, how much do you think it was going to cost for all the equipment that would be required to make this thing a go for my home?
$35,000.
Keep going, baby.
$70,000.
It's not quite that high.
Okay.
Between $45,000 and $50,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I sat with the formula they gave me, how long it would take me to pay for it in the savings of making my meter run backwards and all that stuff.
Well, you know, how long? Obviously that'll happen almost overnight, Charles, you know, based upon what our folks in the green energy field would like you to think. But my guess is you'd probably have to have that system running constantly. And again, you say solar, didn't you?
That's right.
Gee, and this is in a state like Ohio that has only, what, about 86 days a year that are not cloudy to some sort?
Yeah.
I'm guessing that probably, based on where you are and the amount of sunlight we actually get in Ohio on a year, you probably were looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 20 to 25 5 years before you'd recoup your investment.
Right. It was longer than the life of the unit.
Yeah, exactly. Which means you never recoup your investment.
That's right. You never get it back. The way they sell it, if you go out to the places they sell, is because there's a tax credit and actually a subsidy to buy it. So in other words, I would be ripping off my neighbor's tax money so that I could put this big solar thing and be the big hero in the neighborhood and make my meter run backwards. And 25 years, if I could manage to eke it out about 5 years past its expected life, considering the fact that it ran at a 100% of its projected efficiency, which is really low to begin with, for the entire 25 years, I might get that money back eventually, maybe. Now, if it gets hit by a hailstorm, and since we live here in Ohio, and we've seen some hail recently, I have a car that just went through a golf ball-sized hail, and I have the dimples to prove it. That won't survive very long in that kind of weather. The fact is, Barry, that the Spanish tried this thing. They were going to build a green economy, and they were going to force it down the throats of Spanish taxpayers. It has been an unmitigated disaster, and it is part of what has led to Spain being one of, if you recall a couple of years ago, we were talking about the PIGS countries, P-I-I-G-S.
That's right.
That were in failure mode in Europe, that was dragging the entire European Union down. Well, the S in PIGS was Spain.
Spain, that's right.
You know, it was Portugal, Ireland.
Italy. Greece and Spain.
Greece. And Spain, not Germany. Germany and England are the only things keeping the European Union afloat.
Yeah, that's correct.
Mostly Germans. Okay. All being said, you cannot force. It's been tried over and over and over and over and over again. You cannot subsidize a business that the market does not want to the point where it can become successful. And seriously, everybody who's thought about it, I would love to be able to generate enough electricity with the sun to stop using fossil fuels. Now, if you want to argue that we could reduce our dependence on fossil fuels with solar energy, okay, then make it affordable so that Joe Blow can put it on his roof and reduce his electric bill. But right now, it's not like that. Now, Barry, that system that I looked at, how many kilowatts do you think that thing produced?
Chuck, I wouldn't even begin to know.
Okay, 3.5 kilowatts.
Kilowatts, not megawatts, kilowatts.
No, 3,500 watts. Do you know what you can run on 3,500 watts if you're lucky?
Maybe two light bulbs and a fan.
A refrigerator and probably about a room full of other appliances. Not including a hairdryer.
Okay.
Light bulbs, maybe a television set. So you can run a refrigerator and a television and a room full of light bulbs. Everything else would be off. That means your furnace.
Mm-hmm.
You can't run a furnace and a refrigerator at the same time. You have to switch them in and out on that kind of a system. So much, the only time your meter runs backwards is when you're not running anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on this kind of a summer, I just paid my cooling bill. Let me tell you, there were nights that my air conditioner ran from about 9 in the morning until about 4 a.m.
Mm-hmm, right.
Without stopping. So, yeah, it was expensive, but I was comfortable. And I don't keep mine set particularly low. At some points, it's just low enough to take the moisture out of the air to make it bearable. So, this is the problem we've got. We've got a government that has bought into the Keynesian idea that you can create a market by subsidizing it, and it's running smack headfirst into the wall of the true economics, which is that you can't force the market into any corner short of ruinous taxation.
Yeah, no doubt. That's the only way you can get there.
And Barry, that is what the kind of economy, this kind of command economy that they're trying to create. This is a central planner's dream. This is Keynesian. It's Marxism writ large, because this is the exact idea behind Marxism, that all you have to do is figure out all the proper formula, and you can do the proper calculations, and human beings are going to react the same way every time. You and I both know that never happens.
I was going to say,
human beings, you and I are Calvinists, and we talk about no such thing as free will and blah, blah, blah. Well, of course there's free will. That is a pejorative that is slung around by the opponents of Calvinism. We won't get into that. But the fact is, human beings react the way they're going to react.
Yes, they do.
And is God sovereign? Yes, he is.
Absolutely.
And who gave them those things which drive them to do things? God did. And in fact, the government thinks they've got it figured out, and they know nothing. And that's what we're running into here. And that's why Steny Hoyer, his entire plan is absurd. Because you can't pump money into the bottom and then have the top end, the investment end, all come from government. And that is the plan. That's why, let's draw that line between those two dots. The plan is not to have the market choose what gets invested in, but have the government choose what gets invested in.
Well, and we're starting to see the track record of government investing in programs and how successful that's been, as we see wave upon wave of companies that have received not millions, not hundreds of millions, but actually billions with a B, billions of taxpayer dollars in the forms of subsidies and grants file for bankruptcy, because it's an industry that the free market would have closed down a long time before the companies actually did finally realize that it was unsustainable and that they didn't have a building market that they could actually tap into and raise a profit from, but they were floating upon federal tax dollars given to them by the Obama administration.
And that is really the bottom line here. This is all about how much money can I squeeze out of the federal government. There are a number of businesses that are now coming online. It's new technology, and that instead of going to the normal places you go, and that is there are people who, in fact, I think you work for companies that try to hook people up with capital.
Yes.
If I'm not mistaken. You actually try to hook people who have an idea up with other people who have capital who that want to invest.
Yes, that's part of what I do with my business, yes.
And what the government wants to do is shut all that down and say, no, we're going to decide what gets invested in and what doesn't.
Exactly.
And in order to do that, they're unable to sell that idea to the public at large. Therefore, they are taxing that capital out of existence in order to get the money to be able to do that.
Well, that's right, because whenever government steps into the market and chooses who's going to be successful and who's not, usually what happens is a major disruption in those markets where nobody is successful. And that's been the case here with the solar companies that have received tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, like Solyndra and Amonic.
Yeah, Solyndra.
And actually, another one that just had closed down here last month in June, Abound Solar. I mean, the list goes on and on of these companies. Why are they folding? Because of competition from countries like China and other places, who they are basically being undercut. And since they're not, shall we say, sensitive to the free market pressures, they were making decisions that created situations where their products were just overtly too expensive.
If you read this story that we're going to attach to this show, to this posting for this show, also they had major quality control issues. On top of being grossly expensive, they had major quality control issues. Got a lot of units shipped back because they just simply didn't work.
Right.
Well, Barry, that's one thing. When you walk into a bargain store, we have all done it, and bought a tool that was a quarter of the price of the American-made model, and you know you are rolling the dice, and you might get to use it for 6 months and have it burn up on you, when the American tool probably will last you about 20 years, but right now you don't have $80, you have $20, so you buy the $20 tool.
And take
that's what you get.
And take your chances. That's right.
That's right.
Well, and honestly, Charles, I think that the vast majority of average Americans, when they look and see, and they're doing that kind of comparison shopping, and they see one product that's, say, $50, and another product that looks very similar but is $12. They sometimes, I think, because the one is sitting in a retail store and the other one's sitting in a discount store, that sometimes they do that and start thinking, you know, okay, is this made with enough quality that it's going to last me long enough to make it a good value? Because oftentimes, just because something's cheaper doesn't make it a good value.
Exactly.
Value comes in the ability to have extended use of an item or a product that you purchase, so that your dollars actually are being utilized across a longer time frame, or that's where value comes in. If I spend the $50 and I have that tool for 10 years, my cost of using it is only $5 a year. But if I spend $12, I only use it for 6 months and it breaks, my cost of using that tool is $24 for the year, because I'd have to go buy another one for another 6 months.
And you just explained why government central planning of the economy does not work.
Exactly.
And that is because no one can tell the individual consumer how he calculates value.
That's true, because there are many people who would just look at the price tag and say, I like that because it's only $12 and I'll use it, and if it breaks, then so what? Yeah,
exactly.
The money's in my pocket. Even if it's something that I have to use over and over and over again or is critical to my business, I'm saving money right now. Well, why is that, Chuck? It's the time, because that right now savings is going in to be spent on something else right now, which is more entertainment oriented or otherwise, or is personal, what you call discretionary income. Everybody wants discretionary income, but nobody wants to work to get there. I don't think, Charles.
Yes, exactly.
That's what I hate. I hate to say it, ladies and gentlemen, but you know what? We're fairly blunt on this program. And honestly, if we all do gut checks, that's really part of the problem we have in this country, is that everybody wants to be able to have discretionary income to spend on the things we want, whether it's better equipment or tools or vehicles or entertainment options or retirement or whatever else. But oftentimes we don't have the patience to invest carefully and think about long-term value and determine if waiting now to save up to buy something that may be a little bit more expensive, but is a much longer-term value because you can use it and utilize it much longer than you can the quick fix up front. I think in many instances, that's been lost in our culture. I think a lot of people, it's more of this, what I call the microwave mentality. If I can't understand it in a 30-second soundbite or get it hot and ready now, or it fixes my problem immediately, I don't have the patience to wait.
Exactly. It's the microwave mentality. If you think about it, I'd love to have a cabin on a lake in the woods in northern Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
But here's not what I'm willing to do for it. I'm not willing to work 18 hours a day, including Saturdays. I value my time off with my family, and I'm willing to work overtime sometimes, but I'm not willing to put in so much time that I would have no time to enjoy my cabin in the woods by a lake in northern Michigan. And that's the problem you run into. People start to do those value calculations, and they say, is it worth it? And then you start to add into that value calculation the fact that you've got property tax to pay on that. You've got certain kinds of mortgages on that property would not be deductible in some cases because it's a second home. There are all kinds of tax considerations. There are all kinds of expense considerations, and the fact that somebody could break in there and burn it down just for fun. You start taking those things into account. And there are all kinds of value calculations that nobody can account for. That is the whole thing behind Austrian economics versus Keynesian economics. The Keynesians claim you can't make calculations on all those bases, and the Austrians say, no, you can't, and we can prove it because you've never been able to.
Oh, exactly.
Well, we just need more time, and we need a little bit more study. And so that's when you get these ridiculous statements by Steny Hoyer, for instance, that says, if you talk to any economist, well, that's not true. If you talk to a certain class of economist, he will tell you what Hoyer says. But can he show any data to back him up? And the answer is, no, he can't. It's all based on theoretical calculation.
Well, you know what? I think what's happening now, though, Charles, is the Obama administration is trying to put some empirical data out there to try to make that happen. And I talk about this kind of a little bit of a segue, but not much. And that is that just recently here, I believe this was just in the last few weeks, the United States Department of Agriculture has been working on an agreement with the Mexican government.
Yes.
In order to boost participation in what? SNAP. Well, for those of you who don't know what SNAP is the United States Food Stamp Program. Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. We're creating international agreements between our Department of Agriculture and the government of Mexico to promote our food stamp program to Mexican Americans, Mexican nationals, and migrant communities in America. The one class, Chuck, that they just don't dare to write down, illegal immigrants.
Well, they did actually make a reference, Mexican nationals.
Well, yes, but, you know, that's done away in this article. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen,
yes.
we are looking at an article by a writer by the name of Carolyn May from the Daily Caller website, dailycaller.com, saying USDA partnering with Mexico to boost food stamp participation. Yeah, she used the term Mexican nationals. Well, that indicates that they may be here actually legally. But I am going to point out that one of the things that this program is going to be doing is also helping or giving information to those who come into this country illegally so that they know the easy way of getting on the American food stamp program, which I believe, honestly, Chuck, is part of Steny Hoyer's stimulus program.
And I've always wondered, and until Hoyer started talking about this, I've always wondered what the big yank was to get as many people signed up for food stamps as you could. And now that I understand where Hoyer's coming from, he's operating on a flawed economic theory that really, these guys really believe that food stamps stimulate the economy.
Well, they do. Now, Chuck, I want to just, we've kind of been talking about this a little bit, but there's a kicker to this whole thing. And it was something we hinted at in the opening. And I know that a lot of people who are listening to us right now and hearing these two things about the failed company with the stimulus and the food stamp program might be under the sadly mistaken impression that all of this started under the Obama administration. Au contraire. Amonix, the company that is now filing for bankruptcy in the solar panel world, was given $15 million in 2007 by the Bush administration as part of their stimulus program.
Right.
And this partnership with the Mexican government to promote the SNAP program, or the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, was actually signed in 2004. So yes, ladies and gentlemen, maybe Steny Hoyer is just looking at it and saying, well, it's what we've been doing for a while, and maybe that's the thing that will get us to the goal here of fixing the economy, is if we just pump more money into these things. I think it's interesting, Charles, because, again, like we said, we're nonpartisan here, ladies and gentlemen, and I want to make sure that you all realize that some of these programs that we're all howling about now have been around for a little longer than the last 3.5 years.
Well, that's right, and it's amazing. You tell that to people, especially in some of the crowds we hang with, and what do you get? Well, you get people that kind of look down sheepishly, shuffle their feet, and say, well, Bush's goals were different. Well, no, they weren't. It was to pander for votes.
Well, yeah, absolutely, because
let's
be honest about it, okay, ladies and gentlemen? These things are all getting started around election years, 2004, 2007, right before the 2008 elections, because I don't care what your politics is, Chuck, or anybody out there who's listening to us. I don't care if you're right, left, center, upside down, blue, green, red, orange, or yellow in your politics. The whole point is the temptation is very, very strong when you're in an office like that and you have control over billions, if not trillions of dollars of taxpayer money, is to find ways in order to bless your friends and harm your enemies and promote yourself and your reelection. it's sometimes it's not as obvious as just what we call vote buying or graft. It's often more subtle. And some of these are a little subtle. I mean, yes, Chuck, I understand that we're concerned about low-income people of Hispanic descent not being able to provide for their families. Okay, that's fine. I get that. That's not a problem. But the point is that what we have here is a program that is expanding what I call a culture of dependence. Because there's nothing in the program or even in any of the materials that they give to both English and Spanish speaking individuals, anything about how to do things to get yourself productive enough to be not have to rely on the program anymore. But we have brochures like 5 Easy Steps to SNAP Benefits and How to Get Food Help, a Consumer's Guide to the Federal Nutrition Programs. And I get this. Now, remember, folks, this started back in 2004. So some of this stuff was put out there. And this time, a poster that has a slogan that says, "Food stamps make America stronger." I guess those are all going to be endorsed by Steny Hoyer.
Well, let me tell you something, Barry. I have cable, so I occasionally click through. And you'll see cable channels like Telemundo and Univision and some of those kind of things.
Oh, you mean Univision. Yeah, I like that.
Well, Univision. I'll tell you, I went to a church that was bilingual long enough that I learned that around our house it's Univision, but it's really Univision.
Of course.
And I get a lot of fun at the house. That, you know, we'll click through there and I'll go, "Esta es Telemundo." So, just to show you that I can emulate the accent.
We see what Chuck does for fun around his house, ladies and gentlemen. it's a little peek behind the curtain into the window of the world of Chuck and Barry.
That's it. I have clicked through and seen ads for United States food stamps.
Well, not only
in Spanish.
Not only ads, Charles, because if folks go to this page that on the Daily Caller that we'll post up on our website, if they scroll down, there's a related link that says USDA buckles remove Spanish food stamp soap operas from websites.
Yes.
So not just advertising, ladies and gentlemen, actually putting it into the Spanish television networks, into their soap operas, because soap operas are huge on those Spanish networks, aren't they, Charles? I mean, I think every time...
Telenovelas. They're called
telenovelas.
Telenovelas.
Every time I'm at a hotel when I'm traveling on the road and I'm flipping through the channels, I'm always coming across the Spanish channels, and I'm always seeing a soap opera. I mean, I don't think I've seen anything else.
That's it. About the only reason I ever clicked through there is because, I'll be quite honest, the women are breathtakingly beautiful on those things, man, I'm telling you. And you tune in, and you can pick out a word here and there, and you can figure out more or less. You know, all you have to do is watch, and you can figure out more or less what the storyline is. And I get maybe 5 or 10 minutes in, and then I'm done. But I have seen, yes, food stamps worked into the things before. So I know what they're talking about.
Well, you know, Charles, and there's something interesting in the article that we're talking about here. And it's not just that they work these into the television programs that most Spanish-speaking people watch, especially in Mexico. But obviously there's been some heat from some conservatives, including Alabama Republican Senator Jeff Sessions, who really thinks that the wild expansion of the food stamp program is not making America stronger, but is actually making it weaker. And he's wanting to see some changes made. And so this last week, he sent a letter to the Secretary of Agriculture, who's Tom Vilsack, of the Obama administration, and basically wants to find out how this partnership's working. Now, the first and foremost thing that our writer here, Carolyn May, brings up in this article, and we hinted at it here earlier, that the USDA stressed that it is not meant for illegal immigrants, and they're quoted. A spokesman for the USDA is quoted saying, "The partnership with the Mexican embassy was established in 2004. USDA does not perform outreach to immigrants that are undocumented and therefore not eligible for SNAP." Well, that should answer all the problems and all the complaints, shouldn't it?
I'm sorry, that's just sophistry.
Well, but it is, and ladies and gentlemen, and here we're going to take you through Fallacy Detective 101A. What is it that they didn't say you have to read, sometimes you have to read what a spokesman says,
right,
and listen for what they didn't say. They said USDA does not perform outreach to those who are undocumented. But remember, this is a joint partnership with the Mexican government. He's right. silent as to who or in what groupings the Mexican government does outreach, informing all these people of the American food stamp program and how easy it is to get on it. So I think, Chucky, they kind of protest too much, and their silence really does indict them in such a way.
Okay, let's not kid ourselves here, Barry. You're going to hear nothing but a collective silence. The silence will be deafening coming out of the agricultural community on this, because the whole purpose, the whole reason that the USDA is involved at all is the fact that so many migrant workers come up here and pick fruit and vegetables.
That's true.
Certain parts of Michigan are absolutely rife with both legal and illegal immigrants who came up here, why you'd want to move from Mexico to Michigan with the weather. But I can tell you that Western Michigan is full of people who have migrated from Mexico to the United States permanently, came up originally to pick vegetables. And there are second and third and fourth generation people that are here, and they're productive. Very often they're farmers and those kinds of things. So they've come up and gotten involved in the system and are not on the food stamps. But what the government is trying to do here, and that's the bottom line, is they are trying to create dependence. This is what Barack Obama was talking about when he said, if you formed your own business, you didn't do that on your own. He wants these people to believe that. And he wants them to look first not to private resources to get loans and to get help in forming a business. He wants them to come first to the government because he wants to grow the government and, again, be able to use this power to invest that isn't supposed to be there, Barry. This is one of the things that tore apart the early American Republic, was constitutional interpretation that allowed for, quote-unquote, the internal improvements.
Yeah.
This is Alexander Hamilton's program writ large, carried out to its logical absurdity, and Hamilton could not see that this form of thinking about the government, this was in terms of government-private partnership, quote-unquote, it was the old British mercantilism system, would lead to this, that now we are actually encouraging people to move here illegally and get on food stamps.
Well, Chuck, and it's not just people in general, because if you go down to the very bottom of that article, the writer actually put something out there that's very important information. And it's a one-liner which says that Mexico is the only country with which the USDA has an Indigenous Assistance Outreach Partnership Agreement. So I guess if you're a Canadian trying to come across the border, you're not going to qualify. We're not going to help you with your food stamps if you come down from Canada. We're also not going to help you with your food stamps if you come up from America or if you come over from the Asian Pacific Rim. But if you come up from Mexico, yeah, well, we're going to partner with your country to tell you how to get food stamps in this country. Chuck, it's beyond bizarre until you start putting the political aspect and the lenses on, and you realize that, yes, part of this was probably a not-so-a veiled attempt at trying to win the votes of Hispanic immigrants.
Well, couple this with the fact there's two things here. First of all, Barack Obama's announced that basically he's going to give anybody under 30 who's illegal blanket amnesty. And second of all, Eric Holder's actually suing states who are requiring voter ID to make sure that you are a citizen when you come to vote, if you get where I'm going with this.
Oh, no. I think I not only get where you're going, I'm pretty sure our listeners get where you're going with that, too. Obviously, there is a concerted effort in the administration right now to make sure that we check and sort out who is and isn't here in the country legally. And it's interesting, Chuck, because in this article, as I said, Senator Sessions is demanding some answers from Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. And he points out that there's a big problem here because we say that, yeah, we can go ahead and the states can check by this new program called the Systematic Alien Verification for Entitlements, or the SAFE program, but that the Congressional Budget Office can't tell us how much money we're saving on the SAFE program because, drum roll please, the federal government does not know how many eligible illegal immigrants have accessed SNAP. In other words, we just are not collecting that kind of data, Charles. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, bottom line, Barry, they create these shadow systems knowing full well that no one will use them. And so, therefore, the statistics they draw from them may look good on paper, and they're completely meaningless. So I think we need to look, too, at what really is going on. Why are we making deals with the Mexican government? Well, Mexico has a problem. It has an untenable economy. It has a socialist economy, and it is impossible for it to create any real jobs. Basically, the only jobs they get are American companies who take a look at the labor pool and say, wow, we can hire people down there for $2 an hour. And the Mexican government says, sure, come on down, $2 an hour. That sounds like great pay. And they go down there to get a look at it, but they don't have any real new investment, nothing really growing in Mexico. And the reason they don't is they have this gigantically burgeoning population. They have to have a relief valve for all these people who do not have and cannot get jobs. And so we look the other way while people filter into this country and who are unskilled and untrained workers who will come up and work up here for low wages. This is what's going on. We are attempting to stave off problems. We're attempting to help Mexico stave off problems down there by allowing them to use us as a relief valve. Well, look at the problems it's creating here. Is this the right way to handle things? How about if we encourage Mexico to stop being Marxist and actually develop a free market system? But since our own government no longer believes in a free market system, they pay lip service to it. And then you get the president of the United States coming out and saying things like, if you think you built your business, you really didn't. The government did it for you, so pay us. This is what happens. Mexico has been a socialist country since 1910. And this is what happens. You have a rapidly growing population due to advances in medicine. And there's no jobs for them because you've adopted an economic system that is bound to fail. Now, are there vestiges of a free market in Mexico? Yeah, in some places, if you've got enough money and you can pay the bribes. This is where we need to bring up a lot of the world has economic problems. This is way too deep to go into. If people want to hear about it, we can provide them with videos and books by Dr. Michael Kaufman and Tom DeWeese that talk about, do reviews of Hernando de Soto's The Mystery of Capital.
Oh, absolutely. And speaking
which is a great
which,
book.
And speaking of which, that's a fantastic book. Now, a spoiler warning up front, ladies and gentlemen, Hernando de Soto, who is the author of that book, The Mystery of Capital, is an avowed socialist. But a socialist
yeah,
who's seen
exactly.
the light. A socialist yes. who was a researcher and an academic first before he put his personal philosophy into what he was writing. In other words, he just looked at the data honestly and wrote about where it led him. And where it led him to was free markets, private ownership, property rights, all being the key long-term prosperity.
But not only just private ownership, but private ownership with the ability to get at the capital
that's right.
tied up in that property.
That's right.
And, you know, there are people in Mexico who will tell you they own their property. Show me the title. They can't. Because there isn't one. And to get one takes years, and you have to bribe everybody you can find, and it costs thousands of dollars.
Right.
And therefore, these people live on these squalid farms. They can't take out a home equity loan. There was a statistic that something like over 70% of small businesses, which are the backbone of economics in this country. We're something over 70% were started with a home equity loan.
Yeah.
You can't do that in most of Central America, most of South America, most of Africa, huge portions of Asia.
Well, it's
huge portions of Europe.
It's getting to the point now, the fucking country, where it's getting harder to do that here.
Exactly. Because getting a clear title is becoming more and more and more difficult.
No, that's absolutely true, because, yeah, and honestly, a lot of it goes into the issue of, do we in this country really own our own property, or are we, in effect, serfs on government's land?
And, you know, there's, we can't go into this. If you go to www.iotconline.com,
yes,
you can find Pastor David Whitney did a talk on, and that's, again, www.iotconline.com, Pastor David Whitney, and he does a talk on the federal land grab, and he does a section in there on allodial titles and the fact that most titles when the Republic started were allodial. That means there were no liens on them. Now, everybody has a lien on their property, and
yes,
the lien is by the county. That's why you pay county property taxes. You are, in effect, the county has taken your property and mortgaged it for their own bonds. Therefore, you must pay taxes so they can pay those bonds back. And what that they have said is, in effect, we own the property. You are renting it from us.
Yeah, you are a leasehold.
Yes, you are a leasehold, not a freehold.
And ladies and gentlemen, I know this sounds somewhat arcane and possibly medieval to you, but Chuck's right. Really, go avail yourself of listening to that segment at IOTC Online from Pastor David Whitney talking about the differences between allodial titles and what we have today. Because one of the things that we say is part of the American dream is owning your own property. Well, folks, the dream's over with. Nobody in this country really owns their own property anymore, because, as we kind of half jokingly say, just not pay your property taxes for about a year and see who owns your property, really.
Yeah, that's right. The sheriff will be out with a notification that you need to pay up, or they will seize your property. That means they own it. You are merely a leasehold. Now, before we go too far into that, I got off on that tangent because I wanted to talk about this idea of dead capital. And the fact is that we are acting as this relief valve for Mexico and Central America because they have these populations. They can't get the money to found businesses. And they can't get the money because they have this dead capital. And they have systems. If you've ever done business in Mexico, everybody knows about La Mordida, and it translated, that means the little bite.
Uh-huh.
And the little bite is the amount of money you have to pay some petty Mexican official or a policeman or some bureaucrat in order to be allowed to operate.
Well, I learned something new here every day, Chuck. That's the first time I've ever heard of that.
Well, believe me, in the early days of my family business, you basically had to throw in a little bit of extra. It was built into the cost of the goods that you were importing, was money for La Mordida. And it's a fact of doing business in Mexico. Sometimes when you're friendly and you do a lot of work with, they'll admit it. Oh, sure, it goes on. In fact, most of the successful business people have relatives who work either in the bureaucracy or are federales. And this is just a fact of life. Success in Mexico has to do with your connections. It's a very Spanish way of doing things rather than an English way of doing things. In England, we sort of imported that form of market here, and it was based on your talents. In the Spanish culture, it was based on your connections. So there are cultural differences between the United States and Mexico, which is changing the way we look at business. you go into areas where there has been a large immigration from that Spanish culture into the English culture, and the English culture is getting crowded out. And by that, I mean the business culture. Frank, I love to go into the Southwest and enjoy the Southwestern culture, things like the food and the festivals and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the business culture. And that sort of La Mordida thing is starting to show up in the Southwest and in places where that culture is forcing out normal business practices.
Yeah, in other words, it's basically the government becoming like organized crime.
Well, yeah. And that's exactly what it is. I can tell you a story of someone I knew who was doing business in Mexico and went down there and had the tap put on him, basically got pulled over for going 3 miles an hour over the speed limit or something. And the officer basically demanded $200 or this guy was going to go to a Mexican jail.
Mm-hmm.
He demanded he be paid his fine up front, you know?
Well, sure. So I mean, we have a lot of people doing that now, but it's usually on driveway ceiling and roof repairs.
Yes, exactly. Well, anyway, he paid the $200 and then he went and complained to the place where he was going to do business. Well, it turned out that this guy had a brother in the Federale, so they had the cop brought over. You know, he says, we're going to go over to this relative's office. So they went over to this relative's office. Now, this may have been a dog and pony show. Who knows? And they called this officer in, and they actually made him. He says, everybody knows the going rate's $100, not 200.
So they made him give
$100 back. And the guy, and this guy who was like the head of the police in that prefect or something, ripped the guy's epaulets off, took his hat off, and put on this big show about how he had dressed this guy down and reduced him in rank and all this stuff. So who knows? He said, you know, that may have been a show, but it made me feel better and I got $100 back. So that's the way business is done. And, you know, we don't do it that way here, at least not if we're trying to be ethical businessmen. And they've made it impossible down there. And that is what's creeping in. And that's why I'm saying, Barry, now we're getting this sort of thing from the top here. And they're telling us that we have to deal with it or we're racists. Well, I'm sorry. This has nothing to do with race. It has to do with culture.
Oh, yes, it has everything to do with the culture. And here's another thing, and we've said this before on this program, but I'll hit it again, ladies and gentlemen. Race is a false concept. There's only one race. It's the human race. We are all of one blood, as God's word says. Male and female, he made them, and neither Jew nor Gentile nor Greek nor Scythian nor, I mean, keep going. Point is that we're all of one blood. We are all human. We have different ethnicities. We have different cultures, but we all are of the same race. So, you know,
exactly.
For us to get into this racism issue or to talk about race issues, it means that we've lost our Christian worldview. And we are going on a secularist or atheistic worldview.
Exactly. And I'm sad to say that what's going on here is that we now have to tread lightly on issues that we never used to have to, because what'll happen if we start bringing up the fact that we'll probably hear something about this because we're talking about illegal immigrants from south of the border coming on food, it will be called racist. You can hear it. All you got to do is turn into MSNBC. Anyone who is critical of the president or Eric Holder or any of a number of people of different ethnicities in the service of the executive branch, anyone who criticizes them is now racist. Now, there's a problem. There is real racism, and then there are people who cry wolf on that for political gain. And the problem, when you start crying wolf too much, people begin to blind themselves to the fact that there really is racism. And that's the danger that we are now facing, Barry.
That's true.
Is the fact that these guys are using this as a political lever. And it is beginning to lose its effectiveness when there really is racism. And that's a major danger, I think, because people get desensitized and they stop looking for real racism. because it's out there. So, well, I think we've about exhausted this topic. And, you know, we were planning on doing multiples.
Much more. But, and, again, the time is slipping away from us rapidly.
Yeah. And we kind of got far afield from the original, but I think we made our point. And that is that these things interconnect. You cannot look at these in isolation. We started out with a failed subsidy of a
solar panel manufacturer.
And ended up talking about immigration, and we tied them all together because it has to do with worldview. And that's the bottom line.
Which means, ladies and gentlemen, that in the final analysis, it's not what you think, it's how you think that's important. Because think all kinds of different things on each of these topics individually, but until we put them through the sieve of a consistent worldview that's based upon absolutes and see it for what, and start sorting through all of the things in the filters of both the participants, like we talked about the USDA and how they were fully not saying certain things, or the writers of the articles who may or may not have their own worldview agendas as they write, and we're all guilty of that, and going to us who, as we're reporting on these things, have our own filters and worldview agendas as well. But the point is,
And we admit it.
But the point is, it's not so much important what you think, it's how you think. And the best way to know how to think is, first and foremost, is submit every thought and take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ Jesus. That is where there is safety, there's wisdom, there's understanding, there's knowledge in the fear of the Lord and in His Word. The absolute truth of the Scriptures is something that is timeless, ladies and gentlemen. It wasn't just, well, that was okay for that period when Paul was walking around being accosted by the Roman authorities. The truth of God's word transcends time. It is true and it is accurate and it is applicable regardless. As it says in 2 Thessalonians, that all scripture is God-given or God-breathed and it's profitable for instruction, for rebuke, for correction, and for training in righteousness, so that the man of God may be, and in some translations say perfect, some say complete. But it also says to be ready for every good work. And that's what we're trying to do here, ladies and gentlemen. We're trying to be ready for every good work by looking at these things from a biblical Christian worldview.
And with that being said, we ask you to be in a good Bible-believing church and work on your Christian worldview tomorrow. And be with us again on Monday for another Principles and Policies. If you would like to hear this program or any of the programs we've recorded in the past, join us at www.principledpolicy.com, where you can find archives of these programs. You can also read policy articles and comment. Barry and I invite you to come out to www.principledpolicy.com. And if you enjoy this show, or if you hate this show, or if you just have a question or want to make a comment on this show or any of the other shows that we've made in the past, join us at www.principledpolicy.com. If you enjoy this show, we ask that you prayerfully consider leaving a donation. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis, and you may recognize my voice as the co-host of the Institute for Principled Policies, Principles and Policies program. But I am also the president of Rainrock Nutritionals, a sponsor of that program. My company is Rainrock Nutritionals, and we distribute professional-grade dietary supplements designed by experienced healthcare professionals for clinical use. Normally, Rainrock Nutritionals could only be found in the offices of healthcare practitioners, but we make them available directly to you. So if you find yourself in need of top-quality vitamins, herbs, targeted enzyme products, minerals, and a large list of targeted support supplements, visit our website at www.rainrocknutritionals.com. And if you order online, get a 10% discount by using the coupon, all in caps, WLRY, at checkout. That's www.rainrocknutritionals.com.
Principled Policy Consulting is pleased to be a sponsor of Principles and Policies. In today's soundbite world, it is a definite advantage to have in-depth information regarding the major issues. Principles and Policies goes behind the headlines to investigate the underlying worldviews driving the events of our world. Principled Policy Consulting does the same in the governmental arena. For all of your advocacy needs, contact us at principledconsult.com.